Olchek got to it. Olchek busting at center ice. Comes over the line. Shooting. He scores! Olchek! A shorthanded goal! He just blew right through the defense at center. Coffey couldn't even catch him. Fired it by Fjord on the sixth side.
For all you young hockey players out there, this is Eddie Olchek. Don't do what Cap's doing right now, but kidding aside, you're listening to Cap and Hawk.
Olchek!
Welcome back. Cap and Hawk continues on CSN and WGN Plus. Hey, big day on CSN today. You've got us 9 to noon, 12 o'clock, the IHSA 3A semifinals, 3 p.m., White Sox baseball, 6:30 p.m., IHSA 4A semifinals. Lots of great live programming. No sports talk live today.
Wow.
Which means I'll be running around town watching hoop. That's it. Took the train in. Go out and have a little fun with my wife.
No concert on the agenda?
No concert tonight. Okay. That's it. Watch the Blackhawks tomorrow against Dallas. Good weekend. 312-235-2525. He is Eddie Olchek. He joins us now. Edzo, good morning. Thank you for taking time out of your exceptionally busy schedule to join us, talk some pucks.
Hey, Eddie.
Hey, Cap. Hey, David.
Hey, Carm. Hope you guys are doing well. And I know it's March Madness when it comes to basketball, but also March Madness for college hockey. And unfortunately, the Olchek family took it on the chin yesterday. Penn State knocked out of the Big Ten tournament by Ohio State. But that's the way the puck bounces every once in a while. So, but a great thrill for those schools in the Big Ten, of course, to play at Joe Louis Arena here in Detroit, and but that's the way that it goes. So we'll have to regroup and look forward to one more year of college hockey for our son Thomas at Penn State.
At least there's another year, Eddie. At least it's not.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. At least there's always one more year. They're not always next year, because that college lifestyle will end after next year. But good to be with you guys, and I know there's a lot going on, but a couple of big wins for the Blackhawks back-to-back this week against two very good New York teams, so a good positive way to keep this streak going, and now they got to head out to Dallas, and then I'll meet up with the team in Carolina on Monday, and then they'll end the that four-game road trip in Philadelphia next Wednesday night with a national game on NBCSN.
Eddie, 8-1-1 since Patrick Kane was injured. That includes the game that they won, that he went out. And you look at the consistency and the urgency that they have played with. The defense is tightened up in front of Corey Crawford or Scott Darling the other night. Tremendous debut, or not debut, but tremendous first career shutout at a big stage at Madison Square Garden. I guess the question is this: as well as they're playing now, as well as they have played since the injury, any fear of a hockey team peaking too early?
Not with this team, David. Because of this success, because of the leadership, I think you guys know what I think of Coach Q. So, you know, I think enough said on that. I don't. I mean, the concern would be, David, is that in this run, they just had the one game against San Jose, where they put a sixth spot up on the board, right?
Yeah.
Now, I know they did get the four goals against the Islanders, but the first two goals were gifts. Now, they went into the back of the net, you got four goals. That's certainly a positive. So you go stretches where you couldn't find your way to three goals in that stretch, and you get 10 in two games, and then you had the game the other night in New York and win that game on the road. But I think the first thing that Coach Q said after Patrick Kane went out was that we got to be tighter defensively and we have to be better without the puck. And they've done that. Now, as I said, they beat two very good teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, the Islanders did not have much pushback at the United Center on Tuesday night in the first period, but they started coming in the second and third. Corey Crawford was standing tall. And the Hawks were able to, get that nice cushion and win that game comfortably. In New York, it was the opposite of what the game was between the Hawks and Rangers a couple of weeks ago at the United Center, where it was up and down, trade chances, track meet type of hockey, and they got like 125 shots attempted. The other night, it was half that, and the game really, it almost seemed like both teams didn't want to play to the other team's strengths, so they just kind of shut it right down. but right now this team has got it going without the puck, and that was the first thing that Joel Quenneville said when Patrick Kane went out. Can they win those high-scoring games? Can they flourish in that? Yeah, I think they still can, but I think that the strength of this team is going to be their goaltending continues to be what it is and to play very well without the puck.
Talking to the great Eddie Olczyk here on Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus. Hawks and Dallas this weekend. Edzo, would you say you push as hard as you possibly can to win the division, or no, they're in the playoffs. It doesn't matter in the NHL. We've seen the 8 seed win it. We've seen the 1, the 2, wherever. And yeah, just let your guys get some rest. Play, obviously, but don't sell out to win the division. What would you say?
Well, I think you play every game to win. Now, there does come a time in the schedule, whether it's back-to-backs or you're playing 5 and 8 nights, whatever it might be, Capper, is that I think that you do got to pick your spots. And, you know, there's some games that are going to get out of hand either way, and you're able to back off on certain guys, give other guys a couple of different looks. You know, maybe you get a chance to back off on Taves and host a killing penalties. Nothing wrong with that. But you got a chance to win the division. You got a chance to get home ice. It's certainly, that would be a goal of mine, is to get home ice. And, you know, if 3 weeks ago, home ice looked like it was a ways away. Now it's within grasp, and you got St. Louis twice. Let's not forget, you don't play Nashville anymore, and they seem to hit a little bit of a rough patch here over the course of the last, 10 games or so. St. Louis lost a game in Winnipeg last night in a shootout, but they, they've found a nice little groove here. But you do play them twice in the last week of the regular season. So, if you can be right there, you want to win the division, no question, and you play. But I think games and schedules certainly dictate that, whether it's giving Corey Crawford a rest, backing off on Taves and Hossa, maybe you back off on Hjalmarsson and Keith a little bit. But I think once you get to the last week, or if you have an idea on where you are, then you can go ahead and look to rest guys. But I think it's way too early to think about that.
Eddie, where are you with three veterans? I'll give you Brad Richards, who played very well the other night, had the big goal against his former team. Yeah. I think he showed again that patience with the puck, that confidence that he really so good at. Where are you with him? Also, Vermette, how he is fitting in. I think he looks very good in his role so far, how he's adapting. And then Kimmo Timonen, who has admitted that, he does feel 40 at times. It is a little harder than he anticipated. But yet, if he can get things going, you see the value in his short spurts when he is playing at the level you expect, how good he can be for the Hawks.
Yeah, I'll go in reverse order. I mean, I think with Timonen, certainly a work in progress. Is he going to be a guy come the first drop of the puck in the playoffs, David, that is a 18-minute guy? Is he going to be a guy that is going to be a 13- to 14-minute guy? I mean, I think that's what's going to be dictated on the impact he's going to have on this team. I mean, you can just see the savviness that he has and the experience that he has. But it's going to take some time. I don't care what age it is. I mean, you take 10 months off because of injury or, in his situation, sickness with a blood clot. It's going to take some time, and at times, it's been a battle for him. Vermette, I think, has looked extremely well on the defensive side of the puck. I think he's still learning the system. I think he's still gaining some traction on the offensive side of the game, but, first time that you've got a legitimate second-line center in this lineup in a long, long time, and that's a real positive, and, I think it's still room to grow. I think he's made some really good offensive plays. He could easily have, I think, 3 or 4 goals and probably a couple of more assists. But I like what I've seen from Antoine Vermette and just the experience factor that will pay. I would expect it to pay dividends at the most important time. I think when it comes to Brad Richards, I think the other night, certainly a lot of adrenaline. I made mention during the broadcast that the Rangers, it was a class move. They did a nice little video tribute for him in game. And, it was a great goal. I mean, it was a terrific goal. We had talked about it a little bit earlier in the broadcast where the Blackhawks were trying those wraparound type of plays on Cam Talbot. And I suggested is that, look, when you get that opportunity, you got to try to sit there and hold on to that puck a second longer, come out and instead of turning like, you know, one of Capper's cars, you turn like a semi and you come out really wide and you wait, and then you throw your hands up towards the crossbar. And that's exactly what the veteran Richards did. It'll be interesting to see where he kind of plays out here, David, moving down the stretch and into the playoffs. We all know the history of Brad Richards 10 years ago and most recent last year. For him, he has the ability to make plays. He has the ability to go ahead and play on a power play. But that'll be an interesting dynamic, is if he can, you know, play at the fast pace come playoff time, where does Joel slot him in and what his role will be. So I think question marks, but certainly a lot of positives with the elder statesman on the back end and a couple of older guys up front.
Talking to the great Eddie Olczyk. Eddie, I read the Hockey News. It's a cool publication, a lot of great stuff. They just tweeted that they will make their NHL Stanley Cup pick next week or in 2 weeks. They said within the next 2 weeks who they think is going to win it. They said there are 10 legitimate teams that can win Lord Stanley's Cup. How many do you think? You've seen them all.
Yeah. I would think that's fair. I mean, the Hockey News must have listened to our conversation at the beginning of the year, because I felt that, you know, you can make a case for 10 or 12 teams. Matchups become so important, you know, and just, you know, I mean, you guys know I'm a big sports fan, and just listening to a lot of these, college coaches in March Madness and analysts just talking about, you got the four teams upsetting the threes and the Big 12 having a tough time here. It all comes down to matchups, right? It's all about health. It's all about, you know, what type of team do you have? What type of style does the other team play? And can you adapt? Do you have the ability? Do you have the bodies to be able to do that? And some series, look, I don't want to say there's no easy series. So let's make that perfectly clear. But the physical part of it certainly is a lot different. It's a much different challenge as when you don't have a big, heavy team that likes to pound the boards or, you know, stand in front of the net and make you pay a price. So, for example, you know, St. Louis is a much different matchup than Nashville. Winnipeg is a much different matchup than Minnesota, just in particular in the Central Division. So it you can make a case for, I believe, no question, 10 or 12 teams. But I think when you really break it down and you look at it and go, like, for me in the Eastern Conference, there's no question that the Rangers are the team to beat. Now, they've gone a little dry here offensively, big time. They've had a real tough time generating and scoring goals here. Lundqvist looks like he's going to be back in the next little while, 7 to 10 days. But I think the Rangers are the team to beat. But I can make a case for Tampa. You can make a case for Montreal, who just seems to do it with their outstanding goaltender and Carey Price. And in the Western Conference, you know, I mean, there's four or five teams that come to the forefront. You got the Blackhawks, you got Anaheim, you got LA on the outside looking in right now. I agree with that, but it all comes down to who you play, when you play them, are they healthy, and how do you match up against them.
So, Eddie, admit it, you had Georgia State beating Baylor in your bracket, didn't you?
David, all I was worried about is could the Nittany Lions take out the Buckeyes yesterday in men's ice hockey, and unfortunately that was not the case. But, that was a heck of a – boy, that was a heck of a finish, and, I mean, the coach there sitting on that stool.
That was awesome.
And a little bit of timber going down, and then his – I don't know who that lady was that was helping him, whether it was an assistant or whatever, but – she wasn't sure if she should try to pick him up or help him up or what was going on. And then to be able to be there in the last couple of seconds and see that, I mean, that's what makes sports so great, and especially at the amateur level and entertainment, is that in a one-gamer, a team could rise to the occasion. And look, I mean, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, I just know from being in New York in 94 when we were the best team in the National Hockey League, hands down, is that there was a lot of pressure to step up and get it done come playoff time, and that was after a team that hadn't won a championship with the New York Rangers in 54 years. So that added pressure. Yeah, that was there, but it's a lot different in a one game playoff, and this certainly makes for a great experience, great theater, and I guess there's a few that probably busted a few brackets. When you had that upset there with Georgia State.
Yeah, as we let you go, you said brackets, and SportsCenter just tweeted, The ESPN Tournament Challenge, they had 11.57 million entries.
Hold on. Let me guess. Okay, so they had 11.3 million.
11.57 million entries.
Okay. I'll say, holy cow, I was going to say 500, but that's probably way too high. Now, people can play two and three and four different.
Right.
You can play as many as you want.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go that. I'll go three. You know what? I'll go 333.
273 perfect brackets still remain.
Wow. That's incredible.
And how about this? Wade Miley, pitcher for, I believe, the Red Sox.
Sure.
Yeah, Joe Kelly, his teammate, just went on WEEI in Boston and just said, unbelievable, but they looked at Wade Miley's bracket. He's perfect.
How would you be perfect?
You know what? I think we should find out when he's going to make a start, and then maybe might have to get the feet wet there and him throwing a perfect game. There are people that do take that, so you never know. If he's perfect on his bracket, you know, he might be a guy that throws a perfect game this year.
Unbelievable. Edzo, thank you for the knowledge.
Have a great weekend, Eddie.
All right, boys. Have a great weekend.
Will you be visiting Dealey Plaza while you're down there?
Got work to do, buddy. Got work to do.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What time are they running at Santa Anita today?
You know what time. 4 o'clock. I'll talk to you later.
See you later. There he is. I love that guy. The great Eddie Olczyk. By the way, the Dallas mayor weighing in this morning on the signing of Greg Hardy.
Yeah, I saw that.
Called it a shot in the gut.
Good for him.
Wow.
Good for him. Good for Dale Hansen down there. Good for everybody that's spoken out against it.
Anyway, 312-235-2525. Did you hear the whole Dale Hansen thing?
We talked about it yesterday.
Maybe. Did you hear the whole thing?
I only heard the whole thing.
It's, wow. That guy's awesome. Love somebody who's willing to push the envelope. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and get into some, where are we going next?
I want to talk to you about your brackets briefly. I don't want every pick. But I've seen a discrepancy here on the one that you had us fill out, our little game that you wanted us involved in.
Yeah.
You have like two different winners, and I just want to ask for a clarification.
What do you mean two different winners?
I see David Kaplan underneath. We both got 10 right yesterday.
Uh-huh.
All right. And I'm seeing David Kaplan, eventual champion Duke, David Kaplan, eventual champion Kentucky, and then I think you have a Wisconsin. So you're covering all your bases.
Mine's Duke. The other ones are with the kids. We'll be right back.
It's Cap and Haw.
They find Alford. He comes back outside. That's his third miss today.
Well, I thought that ball was wide right.
Oh, my goodness. They called goaltending. It looked like it was way wide right.
Might have been goaltending. Probably was. But we got all these cameras and... It happened so fast.
It's all my fault. I should let the ball hit the plane. I take the blame on myself. I should have made that mistake. As a senior, you can't make those mistakes at the end of the game.
That's courtesy of Turner Sports.
Yeah, that was a very controversial call.
UCLA and SMU, S-M-U.
And SMU's Yannick Marrera to step forward to take responsibility for that play, and it's hard to fault him, I think, because he was, you know, there's so much going on at that point in time. The shot did look like it had no shot of going in. They call goaltending technically the right call, but it's one of those things that they can defend because technically they have the rule on their side. But no self-respecting basketball fan watch that and could say, yeah, that was going in.
No chance.
It was technically by the rule, but in the spirit of the rule, doesn't make any sense.
You know what play it reminded me of? Calvin Johnson's touchdown against the Bears that they took away from him in the first week of the season when Lovie was still the head coach. That led to the Calvin Johnson
rule. Why did
rule.
It remind you of that?
Because there's no self-respecting football fan that watched that Calvin Johnson play and said that's not a touchdown.
Oh, right.
Same thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, UCLA got away with one. They shouldn't be in the tournament, and they probably shouldn't have been advancing. So now you figure they're going to win by 20. They'll go to the Sweet 16. They got all this out of their system. Bryce Alford, 27 points. Wow.
There aren't many coaches I root against. Steve Alford's one of them.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people do. I think a lot of the former Iowa
We were happy to see him go. See you later, bud.
See you later. Take your hair with you.
Jacobson's a big Steve Alford guy.
High expectations when he came in there.
At Iowa?
Oh, for sure. People thought that he was going to be huge.
Coming from Southwest Missouri, which is now Missouri State.
I don't want to go down that road again, but if you, and you can't really do this, but before the Pierre Pierce incident and how he handled that and how despicable that was in how he handled that, was there not a feeling that Steve Alford was a good fit?
There was.
Yeah. That ruined everything.
Pierre Pierce killed him.
Yeah. And that the handling of that kind of made everything else that he had accomplished to that point almost irrelevant.
Yeah, and it killed the program,
yes,
too.
Yeah, it did.
It wasn't just perception. It was.
So what he did when he went to UCLA is he wanted to, in New Mexico before that, fresh start, get away from it, get out from under that cloud. And I still think it has followed him a little bit. He's not the most popular guy.
No, every time Steve Alford's brought up probably on any radio show in the country, he gets cracked.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So, UCLA advances. I want to ask you about a couple games.
Bring them on.
So, we saw Ohio State win in overtime. Mm-hmm. Big, good victory for the Big Ten. Again, if Purdue would have just, you know, held on, would have been another good Big Ten victory. So, Ohio State holds on. But they beat your guy, Shaka Smart.
They did.
Our guy, Shaka Smart. I like to claim him, too. He's yeah. We both like him very much.
Very much.
He's got some Midwest ties. Third straight NCAA loss for Shaka Smart, correct?
Correct.
VCU, after making that deep run a couple years ago, putting his name on the map, Shaka Smart is a guy that we, the third week in March, we pay attention to every move that he makes.
Correct. Just don't forget his best player, perhaps, Briante Weber, out with a torn ACL.
Okay, I know that they're probably extenuating circumstances. I know that they're probably very good reasons that VCU did not beat Ohio State. I really don't care. What I do care about is, do you think that after three straight NCAA first-round losses, that Shaka Smart is any more inclined to have a wandering eye than he did before?
No. He'll only, in my opinion, will only leave if Duke, Kentucky, Carolina, Florida, because I think he was an assistant there, a plum job that he feels he can definitely go there and win the national title. He's not taking Illinois or Marquette.
Well, Illinois is not open.
No, I don't know. That they had offered him.
Right,
that job.
Right. You mean
Marquette?
Previously.
They offered him last year.
But
he's
don't
not
you
taking
think,
any of those.
Nothing's changed.
Middling high majors.
Do you think he has any regret?
No. His wife loves it there.
And she's got a she's an educator.
Yes.
She's in the land of academia. She's a Northwestern graduate, I believe.
I believe you're
right. She has an advanced degree from Northwestern.
His grandfather was a Cubs season ticket holder. He's from Madison.
Yes, I remember that column.
He's come in all the time.
That was a very fun column to do.
By the way, Jakey sends me a really cool video that I actually watched that at the concert. He sent me a video for, what was it, the Westgate? The Westgate Hotel in Las Vegas, which used to be the Las Vegas Hilton, and the line on the Ohio State VCU game was 3.5. Places insanely packed, right? I mean, wall-to-wall people.
And it ended 75-72.
Well, it was 75-69, and at the buzzer, VCU throws in a 3.
Oh, my.
At the buzzer. And so if you bet Ohio State, you lose by half. If you bet VCU, you win by half. The roar in that sports book rivaled the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. Am I right? It's insane how the money changes hands like that. Whoop, nope, sorry, you ain't getting that.
And
I got it.
And there is the essence of the NCAA tournament more than anything else. And the NFL.
Do you think so? Do you think the NCAA tournament is the interest is driven by gambling?
Well, if you call pool sheet gambling, I don't think
do
the
you
gambling
call pool, is a pool sheet gambling?
I guess. I think the pool sheet
technically
that,
yes.
That the secretary to the cab driver to the lawyer to the doctor to the whatever fills out that sheet, and they even if it's for $2, even if it's for nothing, they go through their bracket. They want to see how they prognosticate. It's that there's much more money, I would think, wagered in on a Super Bowl.
No question about that. Yeah, I think so.
Right, but the tournament brings everybody in. That's why people who never watch basketball, they'll sit there and say, college basketball is so much better than the
experts
pros.
Yesterday. Right. So that's why you said everybody's an expert, right? That's why you were linking me with
when I heard Barkley, and they said when they first asked him, hey, we'd like you to do the tournament. We're getting the coverage on TNT. He's like, you got to be kidding me. I haven't watched college basketball since I left Auburn. And he said, okay, I'm hooked. This was when he first started. He said again, he goes, it's so much better than the NBA. He said, I'm hooked. It's the passion. It's this. It's that. He said, it's so much more fun to watch. So,
yeah.
That bothers guys like Carmen who don't like to hear that, but he's the truth.
The thing is, it's fun to watch. The drama is tremendous. The theater is terrific. But when you're watching that Purdue-Cincinnati game and you're waiting for somebody to just hit a shot.
Thank you for
saying
that.
I know what they're talking about. I mean, you know what they're talking about. The quality of play isn't always what you want it to be, but the quality of the experience is definitely better. Always, yeah, exceeds expectations.
That overtime was an embarrassment. Missed shot after late miss. It was awful.
All right, we got to take a timeout. 312-235-2525. Steven Bardo at 1040. Be right back.
It's Cap and Haw.
Game clock down to eight. Spencer almost lost it. Ford. Jackson got a hand on it. It's taken away by August. And a foul on Northeastern. Notre Dame clamping down the Huskies.
We weren't going to beat them by 15. Okay, so don't anybody walk out of here feeling we should have won by 15. Like, it was going to be a dogfight, but, you know, we've been in a lot of close games, and that's what I talked to him about in the huddles. We've been in games like this. I want us to think about it like an ACC game, and we made big-time winning plays to finish it.
That's our boy Mike Bray, our guy getting it done. Survive and advance. That's all you got to do. Courtesy CBS for that highlight. Captain Hawk continues.
The absolute right approach to that victory, because if you're a Notre Dame fan watching that and just an observer, you're thinking, oh boy, they're really going to blow this. Oh my goodness, this team is playing tight. Oh my goodness, every timeout, they're realizing they haven't won an NCAA tournament game since 2011. And these are bright kids on the court for Notre Dame. They're almost too aware of their surroundings and what's at stake. And they recruit such, you know, kids that have such great maturity that they're always aware of the situation. And that can be a blessing or a curse. And I think they played tight. But after it's over, Mike Bray had the absolute right approach. You won. You weren't going to blow this team out. He respects Northeastern because he's been in Northeastern's shoes. He's been at Delaware, the team that really everybody didn't expect to win the first-round game, and you can play with a chip on your shoulder, which gives you a little bit of an edge. Notre Dame could be a tough out now, and I think tougher after getting over that first hurdle psychologically.
Yeah, once you get that first one, you're like, whew, we're alive, man.
I think so, because they have the right approach. Mike Bray is the right guy to set a tone. And they're good. I mean, they're very good. They did not play like a Notre Dame team, you know, typically plays. They did not shoot it as well as they usually do from the perimeter. They played very good defense again, which I think is their benefit. Butler is going to be an interesting matchup. I mean, I think Butler is sort of modeled similarly. They're going to be a team that relies on outside shooting. It's going to be, one of these games that could go to the hot team. I think that if, ideally if Notre Dame plays Butler, you kind of meet in between. Could they play it in Kokomo? I tweeted yesterday. It's kind of right in between South Bend and Indy.
Where's the wigwam?
The wigwam's in Anderson. Anderson, yeah. No, I don't even know if the wigwam is open anymore.
What?
I'm not sure. I think I'm not sure about that. But, yeah, Anderson was the home of the wigwam.
Let's go to the phone. Scott is in LaGrange. Scott, what's going on there, Sparky?
Hey, Scott.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
How you doing there?
All right, I got to test your memory and something about the Blackhawks. 1983.
Yeah.
Was that goaltending in the NCAA finals?
No, because the ball was not on the rim. It was off to the side like an alley-oop.
Lorenzo Charles?
I agree. But
that was also an offensive player.
To that Purdue play.
You mean the UCLA play?
I mean, UCLA play, yes.
It's an interesting take on it, but he grabbed it, and you're saying it could have been offensive basket interference.
I was looking at it closer. These guys are saying the rule was above the rim. That ball was above the rim.
The rule is not just above the rim. The ball also has to be in the cylinder up to perpetuity. If that ball's in the cylinder, then it is goaltending.
And I don't know, is that a recent rule?
No.
I
thought it's always been.
Well, I know it's always been that way, but I don't know if there was some sort of interpretation that might be newer because of the replay. I just think that, as Larry Brown pointed out, you know, you have all these cameras. if you're going to have replay, couldn't you have something? Would replay have overturned that?
You know, I heard John Adams, the supervisor of officials, the outgoing supervisor. He's a good man. I've known John a long time. He said last night when they asked him about it on a press conference, he said there is no way that anyone from any angle could have looked at that and told me definitively exactly what happened. Guys made a call. It is what it is.
And you're always one for, you know, if you were this guy or if it was this, if you were the general manager of the Blackhawks and Coach Q breaks up Hossa, Toews, and Sharp, are you thinking of firing him? Because
Scott!
I'm saying it facetiously, but you know what I'm saying. He's got to keep those guys together.
No, he doesn't. Scott, I'll debate that all day because right now it's working. Right now,
well,
it makes sense.
Sharp with Toews has always worked. They put him on the third or fourth line, and he's missing for 18 games.
I don't know, Scott. Thanks for the phone call.
I appreciate it, buddy.
I think the point is that it has worked now because Patrick Sharp has been reinvigorated for now. But I think that there's a feel to it. You don't question the way Joel Quenneville juggles his lines. It works for him. He always does it.
But let me ask you a question. If the Chicago Bears were coming off of a great season and they're going to be the 85 Bears. It's going to be the greatest joyride in Chicago sports history, which is what I think the 85 Bears was. And they said to you, hey, Ha, been doing this column thing for a long time. We're going to change your role. We want you to chronicle the Bears every flipping day the rest of the season. This entire joyride, you'd be re-energized by some new thing. That's why you move Patrick Sharp to a different line. You can always move him back to where he is. You get re-energized by new challenges in your career.
What's the new challenge in Patrick Sharp's career?
When he moved down to a different line, they reward him. He comes back up to a different line. I think
that's overstating it. I think that you play with different lines. You have different chemistry. You play off guys differently. Patrick Sharp might have a good chemistry with Jonathan Toews, certainly with Hossa. I mean, yeah, it worked, but when it ceases to be as productive as it has been, then I think Joel Quenneville will try something else. Maybe Brandon Saad fits back in there. Maybe when Patrick Kane comes back in the second round of the playoffs, it's Kane, Toews, and, you know, Brian Bickle, which was the emergency line that they went to in 2013 that worked so well against the Kings in the Western Conference Finals. There are all sorts of different combinations.
They're going to put Keith and Seabrook back together at some point in the playoff
run. Maybe they will.
Wasn't it Scotty Bowman who told Joel to do that, and that's when they ended up doing that?
That was in 2010. I think that was one of several moves that Scotty Bowman famously and the ride back from Philadelphia
suggested
on the plane, and Scotty Bowman's writing on the back of a napkin, and Q took every word. You trust Joel Quenneville because they've won two cups with him. It's unorthodox that he changes as much as he does, but
it works.
It works. So
when you got talent, it works.
But I wouldn't fall in love with Patrick Sharp on the top line. It's working now, but let me look at the calendar.
I heard a shot
March 20th.
I mean, Cap seems to think that you need a new challenge to take.
I did not say that.
I glossed right over that.
That's what I heard.
I heard that too.
Wow. Get the ultimate. Well,
clear.
It's just after the Cubs win in the playoffs this year, I'm going to be so successful in my one-day column stint, they may say, hey, ha, we're going to move you over to this thing for a while. Get the ultimate experience of the all-new Samsung Curve 4K Ultra HD TV at Apt in Glenview. The Samsung 4K Curved Ultra HD. You get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come in to Apt today. See the complete selection of Samsung electronics or call them at 847-544-2228. 847-544-2228 for complete satisfaction, free delivery, a better experience, and the best customer service from our guy, Steve Shapiro. Shop Apt, ABT, apt.com. Pleasing people since 1936. I could never do what he does. You...
Me?
I couldn't do what you do.
I drifted off there. I was doing what you do.
That's unbelievable. We'll take a timeout.
Felt so good.
Guys just love to have fun. Stephen Bardo is next.
Tribune Tower Chicago. This is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
To go to the round of 32, Villanova waits. Lacy gives it to Anya. Pop goes to two. Anya, little turnaround. And it goes! BJ Anya! NC State on top! takes him to the round of 32. Beautiful.
That's courtesy Turner Sports. What'd he say? BJ Onions?
Sounded like it. Anya with onions.
That was awesome. NC State dispatches LSU, who down the stretch, hold on, I did my homework.
They choked.
0 for 12 from the floor, 0 for 4 from the line the last 4 minutes.
Wow.
And that was Gag City. I'd like to ask that coach, Johnny Jones, what the hell are your guys doing shooting threes when you've got the lead late? Move the ball!
They did not resemble a very well-coached or intelligent team.
No. I'm just stunned. Mark Gottfried wasn't in his finest moment yesterday either, but nobody is worse yesterday than Rick Barnes. Guy's got more talent than the Bulls, and they just whiz right down their leg again.
Easy there.
Jeez.
More talent than the Bulls?
I'm kidding, but they got so much front court talent at Texas, and they just whiz right down their leg again. They need a coaching change down there. Stephen Bardo joins us now. Former Illini standout, NBA player, doing great work as a broadcaster. Hello, Stephen. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. How about you? How you guys doing?
We're doing well. My bracket's still alive, but it's on life support. Look, yesterday was just everything that's so awesome about the tournament.
Oh, there's no question about it. With the number of close games, and I don't know that I've ever seen two threes go down in the same morning, not in the same day, but Iowa State and Baylor go down early in the day, and it just kind of set the tone for the rest of the day.
You know, Stephen, I think if you look at it from the Big Ten perspective, Purdue was right there. And as disappointing as their loss was, I think Ohio State came through in the clutch, and they were 10th seed. I felt like was a little bit underseeded, and they win a game maybe some people didn't expect, but they did in the clutch what Purdue couldn't pull off. And so you go into today's Big Ten games and you think, okay, you know, this is an opportunity for the Michigan State and in Indiana. So how did you see those two games specifically yesterday?
Oh, I think you hit on the head. You know, when you talk about Ohio State able to overcome the pressure of VCU, they did a good job of taking care of the basketball. They got really good production from some unlikely sources. Amir Williams, usually there's an ATB out for him, but he had 13 points. Jayshon Tate, before he fouled out, I believe had 12 points. And then Kata Bates Diop, the freshman from Norman, Illinois, hit two huge threes. So Ohio State, you know, they did what they needed to do to win that game and somewhat of an upset. Purdue, Cincinnati, that made us all sick to our stomach. You know, when you have John Octius Sr. and Rayfield Davis Jr. on the free throw line at the end of regulation and overtime, you've got to convert those. And they weren't able to do that. And they let an offensive, an anemic team in Cincinnati come back and beat them. You know, Purdue was up 7 under a minute left. You can't lose those games.
Stephen, when you look at today's field, rather than looking back at yesterday, what are the games that intrigue you? I mean, I think Gonzaga wins comfortably. I think Duke wins comfortably. But I think there's some other good ones. I like Providence to take out Dayton. Some people think I'm nuts.
Oh, no. Providence is one of the scariest teams in the tournament. The way that they play, they have two studs in Chris Dunn and LaDante Hinton. Those are two of the better players in the Big East Conference, and I would argue that Chris Dunn is one of the best guards in the country. So Providence getting past Dayton, even in Columbus, wouldn't surprise me at all. The games that I think are kind of interesting, Wyoming versus Northern Iowa. I know Northern Iowa has, you know, besides their Missouri Valley Conference loss to Wichita State in the championship game, they've had a storybook season. But that Wyoming team is scary with Larry Nance Jr. and Josh Adams, a three-point specialist, so watch out for that. I think Indiana's going to have their hands full of Wichita State. I can't really see a scenario where the Hoosiers will beat the Shockers in that one. And then also, from a Big Ten standpoint, Iowa's going to have their hands full against Davidson. We know that Davidson is a great tournament team. They were picked last in the A-10 this year, and they ended up winning the regular season. They scored 70 points or more 25 times this year, so that's going to be an entertaining game. So those are a few that kind of catch my eye.
Let's talk about yesterday's 14 seeds that actually, you know, won games and captured people's imagination. Georgia State and UAB. They were the games that you remember, the games nobody expected, all sorts of history. But, Stephen, I think there's a sense that, okay, now they've accomplished everything they could out of this tournament. They've got the cover of next year's media guide. They have all the images and made all the memories. But you look at the brackets, do you think that UAB can beat UCLA? Do you give Georgia State any sort of shot against Xavier? Because as we saw yesterday, anything can happen.
Oh, I definitely give those two teams chances against Xavier and also UCLA, because let's be honest, guys, UCLA got there on a blown call. I mean, the kid from SMU reaches up, and he's a senior. Most players are instinctive and know when to go after a shot or not. That ball had no chance of going into the basket, so that was a bad call that advanced UCLA. They were a team that kind of caught fire late behind Bryce Alford's shooting, but they're a team that's up and down. UAB played an outstanding ball game against Iowa State. They're a young team. They have one senior, and they play for Jared Haas the way that you like to see coaches command their team. And they play a very disciplined style. They can definitely beat UCLA, and I think Georgia State behind Hunter, Coach Hunter's son, I think they can definitely beat Xavier.
Stephen played at Illinois. When you look at the Big Ten, you look yesterday, Pac-12 goes 3-0. The Big Ten, the Purdue game obviously is a disappointment, but the Big 12 goes 0-3. I thought Texas, ridiculous how they played, and Iowa State's rebounding. Did they ever hear of blocking people out?
Well, I think when you look at the teams from West Virginia, it's really all about matchups in my mind. And so you look at an Iowa State team that, you know, really flourishes from the three-point line. They get a lot of layups. They're decent defensively, but what I saw was a UAB team that just killed them on the glass. I mean, murdered them.
That's what I mean. Nobody checked anyone off.
Yeah, but see, the thing of it is, you know, UAB's got some guys who know their role. They're not trying to score. Their interior guys scored when they had the opportunity, but their main what they tried to do is they said, listen, we can't out-jump these guys. We're not as fast as these guys, but we're strong and we're tough. And we're going to out-tough them. And that's what you saw. And it was kind of unusual because the Big 12 is a very physical conference, one of the best in the country, but it was the matchups of UAB and also, what was the other game that you said?
I was talking about Baylor and Texas. I was talking about the Texas loss.
Yeah, Texas has been enigmatic all season long. You know, I think they've got some chemistry issues. There's no way that team should be playing the way that they did. And the matchup with Butler. Butler's a disciplined ball club. So you're looking at a Baylor team who, in my opinion, overachieved. And if they're not shooting the ball well, then people can kind of speed them up a little bit like Georgia State did last night and turn them over. They're susceptible. So it's just that the Big 12, in my opinion, they got some tough matchups in those first-round games that didn't favor them.
Stephen, away from the NCAA tournament, obviously everybody knows your connection with Illinois. I don't know that John Gross has had two more disappointing losses or more troubling losses back-to-back than the Big Ten tournament loss to Michigan, followed up by the embarrassment in the NIT. I've always been of the belief where the NIT really can't hurt a coach. It can only help a program. But I think that loss is so
Tuesday.
Bad, you get some indications that was, you know, one of those things that's going to be hard to forget. Where are you with John Gross, and how much damage did the last two losses do to confidence in him as the right guy moving forward?
Well, as a former player, I can identify when certain things aren't right in the locker room. And I think what we saw with Illinois as they dropped six of their last eight coming down the stretch, I think we saw a chemistry issue. And I haven't been privy enough to find out exactly what it was, but there was something that happened to where the guy just threw up their hands and said, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm going to show up, but I'm not really invested. And that's usually the opposite of the direction that John Gross teams typically go late in the season. They typically peak at the right time. They start to take off. So to me, the indications point that there was some kind of personal battle. There was some kind of internal battle with the team. Now, with that being said, when you come to the United Center and you drop six of your last eight or five of the last seven or something like that, and you're expecting to recruit top-notch talent out of the city of Chicago, it's just not going to happen. I think John Gross is the right guy for the job. I have confidence in him. But I think a lot of times when you look at today's player in college basketball, they think it's a right to wear a jersey. It's a privilege to put on a University of Illinois jersey. We're still the flag state institution in this great state of ours. And Chicago should be a crown jewel of the University of Illinois. And when that's happened in 2005 and 1989, you see the results. And so there's got to be a history lesson given to the people that are in charge in leadership of the University of Illinois, that are in charge of the athletic department, to understand that the University of Illinois can no longer be run like East Central University, Illinois. It needs to be run with Chicago in mind as the main target of qualified student-athletes and students, and I don't see that happening right now.
Hey, Stephen, before we let you go, DePaul is in the midst of a coaching search. UIC in the midst of a coaching search. Bradley may be getting ready to have a coaching search. If you could give advice to Jeannie Ponsetto at DePaul about what she should do, I've looked at all of the available candidates. I mean, and I've got this list I've put together of like 30 guys. And you start thinking, yeah, that guy makes sense. And then you dig deeper and you go, Bobby Hurley. He's never put a program together. He walked into Reggie Witherspoon's talent. He's gotten to the tournament with that team, but can he come into a rebuild situation in a city he's never worked in and win? I'm not quite sure. Who would you hire? And then I'll tell you what I would do.
I would hire Laval Jordan of Michigan. And here's why I say this. Laval should have gotten the Butler position when it became open. He's a former Butler player.
Yep.
Has been an assistant at Michigan, has been credited for the player development of a lot of the guys that have turned pro recently out of Michigan. I think he's an outstanding talent. I think Jeannie and other coaches need to look at up-and-coming assistant coaches who are ready to make that next step, because one, an assistant coach is going to have the fire in their belly and the energy to get to turn around a program. And two, you've got to look at the makeup of the coach and can they get in Chicago and develop these relationships. I think Laval Jordan could do that.
If it was me and I was running the search and you told me I had the money that they paid Oliver, I'm flying to Dayton, Ohio, and I'm putting a check in front of Archie Miller, and I'm saying, okay, my man, A-10 to the Big East. I'll pay you $2.2 million, whatever it was Oliver was getting. I'll give you the 7-year deal. Come fix my program.
I don't think they're willing to go that high again. I don't think that they're going to pay. They're still paying
Package
Purnell.
Determines pool. If you're not going to pay, you're not going to attract the top candidates. It's the way it is.
Archie Miller is in a unique situation because that Dayton situation is not mid-major, as you well know, Cap.
Right.
That's a great situation. They sell out their venue. They fly charter. Dayton is a great basketball market. So Archie Miller is not going to leave for a reclamation project, in my opinion, like DePaul.
I don't think
he's going to go to a Power Five conference situation. I do like his ability to coach. I like what he's done at Dayton. I'm just not sure that he would be the type of guy that would take a DePaul job. But someone along his line, I think, is a great look.
Appreciate the time. You got any big upsets today? Because my bracket, I thought, yeah, I'll be okay here, and whacked around yesterday.
Well, you know, I think the one that really stands out to me is Wyoming over you and I at 12 or
no
five,
shot.
Which, oh, wow.
No
that's a big
shot.
One.
Wyoming over Northern Iowa? You don't think so?
Not happening.
Okay.
How about Buffalo?
No, I think West Virginia. I like Buffalo, but I think West Virginia's pressure will wear them down.
Well, I think Buffalo wins, Stephen. Who knows, though?
Okay.
Yeah, I've got West. I'm with you on West Virginia, but I'll give you one. Providence has taken out a tired Dayton team.
That's no upset, though.
I don't think there's any question about that. And they should, because they're the sixth seed.
Yeah, they should. That's no upset.
All right.
Go on a limb there, Cappy.
Hold on a second. Hang on.
I'm going to take the higher seed to win the game against the team that's tired.
Hold on. Hang on a minute.
Now you got him scrambling, Steven. So you pick Wyoming. That's a good one, though, because I think Northern Iowa is one of those teams you take for granted is going to do well in March because they have that pedigree.
Yes. Yeah. And Seth Tuttle is going to get a chance to play at the next level. I don't know if it's going to be at the NBA level, but he's definitely got a skill set that's unique for big at the college level. And they've got guards who, you know, Northern Iowa, they're going to play great defense. They're going to keep the score down. But Wyoming plays the same style. And Larry Shyatt is a veteran coach. And Larry Nance Jr. and Josh Adams, I'm telling you, are a nice 1-2 punch inside out.
I'll give you one. It's going to go right to the wire. UC Irvine, the 13, might take out Ricky and the white suit.
Oh, God. That's a reach.
You know what? I don't see you UC Irvine handling their pressure. Louisville's going to pressure them all game long. And I think that's going to be the determining factor.
Steven, they better not try and challenge Mamadou Njai at 7-6.
Hey, man, the thing is, Louisville's got some after brothers of their own that's going to challenge him regardless of if he's 7-6 or not. They're going to go through the rim.
Thanks, right. Steven. Have a great weekend.
See you, buddy.
All right, fellas.
Take care. That's what makes the tournament so special. I disagree with him. I have Indiana beating Wichita State.
I do too.
Dan Dockage just tweeted, you'll be able to know in the first 10 minutes of the game, if Indiana's getting decent, clean looks, they're going to win the game. He said, if they can't shake free and get good shots, it's over. We got to take fast time out. We'll come right back. It's Cap'n Hawk.